Welcome to an audio cast from IFR, the magazine for the accomplished pilot. You can check it out at www.ifr-magazine.com. When it comes to dealing with an emergency, cool thinking and practice can make the difference whether you're high in the clouds or just off the runway. IFR editor Jeff Van West talks with emergency maneuver expert Rich Stowell about how he teaches pilots to be ready for and handle aircraft emergencies and upsets.
I'm talking today with Rich Stowell, who was NAFI's first master instructor in aerobatics and who's an expert in emergency maneuver training. How are you doing today, Rich?
Great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot for being on. Appreciate it. Just so our audience knows, what's your background and how did you get into emergency maneuver training?
Well, actually, I learned to fly with the sole goal of doing aerobatics. Got my private pilot's license in 1984 and began instructing in emergency maneuver training in 1987. Been doing that full-time ever since.
You've moved from aerobatics into emergency maneuver training. What was the appeal there? Why did you go into training folks?
Well, soon after I got my license, I moved to California and started flying out of Santa Paula Airport, which has long been a hotbed of aerobatic training and spin training. And there was an existing emergency maneuver program there that got absorbed by the flight school where I was flying from. And I was offered the opportunity to develop that program a little bit further and begin teaching it. And since I was still kind of relatively new, having gone through the private pilot training and working on other ratings, there were several key areas there that I thought, gee, wouldn't this be nice to know, have known as a student pilot and a private pilot. And so we tried to tailor the course a little bit more away from aerobatics and more toward emergency procedures for the straight and level pilot.
Well, now as a relatively new pilot yourself, you know, young to the field, how did you get the experience and the expertise then to be able to pass on this information to other pilots?
Well, some of it, since I started doing aerobatics immediately upon getting my private pilot's license, I got involved with the International Aerobatic Club and competition aerobatics. And so that's kind of where I learned at least the precision aspect of aerobatics. And then hanging around with a lot of people at Santa Paula, one of my mentors, Sammy Mason, author of the book Stall Spins and Safety, and several other people who are involved with the nuts and bolts of spin training, spin awareness, and they sort of guided me and gave me some instruction in that area.
So what would you say is the number one mistrained or undertrained thing in handling an emergency?
Basically, it's the ability to think and control your actions while you're under stress. A lot of our training, of course, focuses on procedures with dealing with various emergencies, but we don't deal with the human aspect where we're going to have adrenaline and we're going to have a lot of heightened senses and the sensory cues that are coming in to us while we're under a lot of stress, and the ability to be able to function in that type of an environment. And I think that's often missing when we talk about emergencies.
So how are you trained for that, though? I mean, it's one thing to do the kind of, you know, logical training of procedures, but how do you train for the emotional side?
Yeah, the emotional side comes through the scenario-based training where, first of all, we discuss the procedures, the how and the why, and then we go out into the airplane and we actually see those procedures in action as we start to ratchet up the stress levels through various scenarios. For example, a simulated skidding based a final turn at altitude that culminates in an inadvertent stall or spin departure where the stress level is elevated during the training environment, but yet the pilot is still able in the controlled environment to work through that and see the procedure work and develop the confidence that they can think and act under duress and they can recall the procedure and basically make their body do what they're asking it to do.
So what are your thoughts on the turn back to the runway with an engine failure on takeoff debate?
Well, it's certainly been an active debate of late, and there's a lot of discussion on a lot of the aviation forums, and I've written about it extensively as well. You know, there are different points in the traffic pattern when it might be appropriate to return to the runway, you know, if you're on a crosswind leg or if you've made it to the downwind leg. But if we're talking strictly about a complete and total loss of power while we're on the climb portion on the upwind leg, statistics consistently show that The survivability rates are much higher if pilots continue to go straight ahead, which is what the FAA and the AOPA or Safety Foundation and a lot of instructors have recommended for many, many years. And unfortunately, what happens is that, you know, there are people who have survived turnarounds, but they've actually beaten the odds, but that doesn't mean that the risk factors aren't higher when we turn back to the runway. And so from a training standpoint, not only do we teach procedures, but we need to teach pilots how to assess risk and what are the risk factors, where is our best chance of surviving, say, an engine out on the upwind leg during takeoff. And typically that is still going to be out in front of us. And yet a lot of the arguments are, well, suppose that you have a lot of buildings or a lot of rugged terrain out in front. All of that, you know, we might have to deal with in the practical environment. But ultimately what determines whether or not pilots survive these types of scenarios is not where they go, but how they arrive. So even though the terrain might not be favorable or there might be buildings out in front, if we can control the crash, control the airplane for as long as we can, and arrive at a low, slow landing attitude configuration, we have a much, much greater chance of surviving than if we try to turn back, botch the turn, inadvertently stall, spin into the flat ground at the runway. There's not a good chance of survival in that case.
That makes a lot of sense. So arrive at the scene of the accident sort of as slow as possible and under control.
Yes, under control is far more critical than where we go. And that's a very hard thing for pilots to come to grips with, because it seems at least initially obvious that, well, if I go into the trees, that's not as good a scenario from a survivability standpoint than if I try to turn back to the runway. And of course, there are optimum ways of trying to turn back to the runway, but statistically speaking, historically speaking, what we're asking pilots to do when we talk about the turn back maneuver to the runway is to do two of the things that pilots historically have been underperformers in terms of their ability to control the airplane, and that's maneuvering flight and stall spin. So now we're asking them to do maneuvering flight at a critically high angle attack, low airspeed, very close to the stall, while we're under duress, while we're close to the ground, while the adrenaline is pumping, while we might have passengers who are kind of terrified over the scenario. And so there are a lot of elements there that are not conducive to controlling the airplane on the turnaround.
If there was one thing that a pilot could do differently on their next flight to be better prepared for an emergency, you know, something to take home and when you walk out to the airplane tomorrow you could do, what would that be?
Most of it is just a thought process, and that is, you know, weighing the risk of the various options in terms of benefits, not perceived losses. One of our inherent difficulties that we have as human beings is that whenever we're weighing our options, weighing risk, we tend to weigh them in terms of perceived losses instead of perceived benefits. And a good example would be overshooting the turn base to final. The perceived loss, if we don't get back onto final and land the airplane, would be perhaps maybe negative a negative view of us or in our piloting skills by our peers, or if it's a rental airplane, you know, if we do go around, it's going to cost us a little bit more money. So that's looking at it in terms of losses. And so from that standpoint, the pilot is almost forced to try to cheat the turn back to the runway to get it on the ground. Whereas if we looked at it in terms of benefits, well, the go-around skill set is perfectly matched to this scenario. The other benefit is we're logging a little bit more flight time with one more hop around the pattern. The other benefit is that we've exercised good risk management and situational awareness skills. So we need to look at our options in terms of which option gives us the lowest risk and the most number of benefits, not the losses that might be associated with them.
That makes a lot of sense. So if someone wanted to find out more about those emergencies or contact you, how would they do it?
Actually, three avenues. One is my website, richstowell.com. They can also get other information from cpaviation.com. And I've just started providing some audio flying tips on goldsteallive.com.
Okay, and richstowell.com, that's richstowell.com,
right? That's correct.
Terrific. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time, Rich. Really appreciate it.
Sure, Jeff. Thank you.
To learn more about this and other topics important to instrument pilots, subscribe to IFR Magazine. Check it out at www.ifr-magazine.com. For breaking general aviation news, log on to avweb.com. Thanks for listening.